It's time for the Phenology Show. Phenology is the rhythmic, biological nature of events as they relate to climate. We had a question last week on our talkback segment about terrestrial snails. John from Hill City called, said his yard was alive with terrestrial snails. And I thought, well, this won't be too hard. I'll just go on the internet and find out all about terrestrial snails, and I'll tell John and all the rest of you everything there is to know about terrestrial snails. Well, it turns out that if you would like to become that expert, you can go on and do your study and get out and see what you can find about terrestrial snails, because there has not been a lot of research on snails in Minnesota. It says, and this is from a DNR page, the terrestrial gastropod fauna, that would be terrestrial snails, land snails of the Midwest, includes a number of the rarest animal taxa in North America. This fact was recognized as early as the late 1800s when the Pleistocene Hendersonia occulta was discovered alive along the Mississippi River Valley. And that was by a fellow who documented that in 1948. Since then, a number of Midwest endemics or rare endemics have been identified, and it goes on to name a bunch of them, which I will skip because most of them are quite difficult to ferret out the scientific name. Previous investigations into terrestrial gastropod biodiversity in the upper Midwest have been largely limited to the Paleozoic Plateau, that would be the Driftless area, and the Iowan erosional surface in northeastern Iowa and the Black Hills of South Dakota, as these areas were beyond the limit of the Wisconsin glaciation, and they were presumed to be the only potential refuges for the glacial relict taxa. However, investigations made from 1995 to 98 from eastern Wisconsin to southern Ontario documented that these relics were not as geographically restricted as previously believed. Four habitats were found to harbor the bulk of important land snail species in this area. And there was a fellow by the name of Nicola who did the research in 96 and 98. Carbonate cliffs support populations of at least 17 rare Michigan and Wisconsin taxa, nine of which are likely glacial relics. The fauna of these sites, while bearing marked similarity to algific talus slope and moderate cliff sites of these Paleozoic plateau, are unique and support a higher frequency of northeastern species or beyond their normal range limits. Fens harbor the European disjunct Econulus alderi and the presumed glacial relics, and it goes on to list a bunch of them. All it tells me in reading this is that, this particular paragraph brings it out best, perhaps. This is particularly true in northeastern Minnesota, where anthropogenic impacts from forestry, recreation, and development are high. Almost nothing is known about the faunas associated with the west shore of Lake Superior. Holbricht, 1985, identified Minnesota as one of the most poorly known regions in the eastern U.S. for land snails. No species had previously been reported from Cook County, and only six have ever been recorded in a total from Lake and St. Louis counties. So, John, I'm terribly sorry that I can't do much more than that. I guess I would encourage you to send me a photograph of one of these snails if you can, and I will try to pass it along to some others, and perhaps we can at least identify what it is you're looking at in your yard. But boy, anybody out there who's interested in maybe a master's degree or a PhD, it looks like snails could use some study here in northeastern Minnesota. It hasn't been all snails for me. This past week has been full of lots of interesting observations, including a mother otter who climbed out on a road in a kind of a swampy low spot. I didn't really expect there to be otters in there, but here comes this mother up on the road, and right behind her was another young one. And as I drove past, looked like there might have been a third otter in that group, so they were maybe out traveling about. Can't really say what they were doing, but definitely otters along the road, and that was always exciting. It is always exciting to see. Last Wednesday, or was it, last Tuesday, about 7 o'clock in the evening, I saw a sundog on the southern side of the sun as it was setting, and it reminded me of the physics of sundogs, and just a possible short explanation here. The only time you see sundogs in the summertime is either very early in the morning or very late in the evening, because the sun has to be at a low angle in the sky in order for the little ice crystals to catch the sunlight and refract it as a rainbow. And this occurs, as I said, early morning, late evening in the summertime. In the wintertime, because the sun is at so much a lower angle in the sky, you can see sundogs almost any time of the day when the ice crystals are present. So, little sundog the other day, just a reminder that despite the heat, there are some signs of things that we generally see in the winter. You may recall last week I was talking about the month of August and some of the things that it would hold forth. And one of the things that I mentioned last week was the Carolina grasshopper. I talked about how it had the black wing with the white border or cream-colored border, which reminded me of the mourning cloak butterfly, except that the Carolina grasshopper folds its wings up like an accordion and has these sort of reddish-brown forewings or covering wings that cover these things, and they don't fly at all like a butterfly. I mean, they come up, they fly short distances, and then they land on the ground. If you've seen some Carolina grasshoppers, keep your eye on them. As we get further into the month, they will begin to hover. They'll fly up about 3 or 4 feet in the air and hover right in one spot. And I suspect that that has something to do with their courtship. But I'm not absolutely positive about that. So if you know more about them than I do, and that probably includes about half of you out there, why, send along a note. I'd like to know more about the Carolina grasshopper myself. False Solomon seal, a big plant of the woods, not big, 2-3 feet long and maybe 18 to 24 inches tall, has these clusters of gold berries at the end, and those gold berries, they're starting to get flecked with a little bit of red. So keep your eye out for the false Solomon seal berries in the woods. Canada thistle, boy, last Wednesday, I don't know if it was a combination of the wind and just the right time of year, but there were seeds flying everywhere. Canada thistle seeds were everywhere in the air that day. Fireweed, I mentioned the seed pods, which are the same color as the flowers and are starting to swell. Ed Dallas reports fireweed blooming down, or seeding, opening up, and seeds are popping out of the fireweed down in his neighborhood. I haven't seen it up here, but any day now I would expect that to happen. The asters continue to bloom. Of course, there are the big flat-topped asters, which are pretty easy to look at or find. The large-leafed aster, another easy one to find. The eastern lined aster, or Aster lanceolatus, appears to be in bloom. Long, thin blades of leaves, very, very, very thin, like a quarter of an inch wide and maybe 3 or 4 inches long. And small blue flowers on those, finding them along the edges of lakes. A couple of butterflies have come to the eye lately. There are some monarchs around, and they are there are still some monarch caterpillars out there too, and they will be metamorphosing into the monarch butterflies that will be flying south here in another 2, 3, 4 weeks. Watch for big flocks of monarch butterflies moving south very soon. White admiral butterflies, lots of those around. Black butterfly with a big white border, I'm seeing them everywhere. Big populations of white admirals. I'm also looking at the clouded or common sulfur butterflies. There's a lots of courtship activity that you can observe. Chase flights, where you'll see two of these yellow butterflies near a field somewhere, and they'll kind of fly up in a big spiral, and it's all about territory, and one of them is trying to drive the other one out of its territory. You can watch that. And my wife reported seeing clouded sulfur butterflies puddling, you know, sitting along the edges of water along the driveway. And this is a behavior that is common to a lot of butterflies, has to do with attracting minerals, sorting minerals out, the minerals that they need, that they require for copulation. The males puddle, they pick up these trace minerals, the minerals are valuable, and the females seem to be able to sense whether or not the male has a dowry of chemicals, minerals that they might like. And if that's the case, they will oftentimes select that male for mating, and he will pass along with his sperm, he will pass along this little packet of minerals that the female needs for her own life. So watch for puddling behavior among the butterflies. And it's not only the sulfurs that are going to be doing this, but the tiger swallowtails and the monarchs and all the rest of them. And sometimes it's puddles, sometimes it's animal scat. It can be a lot of different things, but they're out there searching for trace minerals that they require. I went out for a ride the other day, and just to show you how serendipity works, I was looking for pine sap. So I was riding my bike through my pine plantation, and the first thing I did was scare up a covey of about 5 young grouse. They were going every which way. It was quite exciting. The dogs didn't know which way to turn. Every time they turned to follow one, another one got up from the same spot and headed off in a different direction. So they were all running around kind of confused. And I kept riding down through the pine plantation, and I see this tall stem with a cluster of flowers at the top. And I thought, what the heck is that? And I got off my bike and looked at it, and it turns out that it was downy rattlesnake plantain, and I've never seen it before on my property. It's not an uncommon orchid, but certainly more rare than, say, the asters or the black-eyed Susans. But it grows in acid soils, and has this beautiful variegated leaf that is lovely to look at, and then the flowers are pretty nice as well. I will try and get a couple of the pictures that I took of that plant up on the internet in the next day or so that you can check it out. I saw my first flock of American crows this past week, and I also saw a flock of Canada geese flying, and that tells me that they are recovering from their eclipse molt. They go through a molt in the summertime where they are unable to fly, and now that appears to have passed, and they are out and practicing their flight techniques a little bit. So watch for flocks of geese again, and that will be happening more and more as we move through August and into September. Bottle gentian, closed gentian, is still blooming, probably at its peak of bloom. White turtlehead is still blooming, and that one is probably at its peak of bloom. And final note for this week, that little bald eagle, that little baby bald eagle that's been crying from the nest and crying and crying and crying for weeks and weeks and weeks, he finally is flying. He was over the house the other morning. Sunday morning, he circled the house and doing his little... He was still crying, but he was flying. And he found a little thermal there, and he took a ride up, and he got up fairly high. So he's maybe been flying for a week or so, but he's definitely testing all of his new equipment and finding out just how to control his wings and tail in the breeze. And it's fun to watch. Another successful year. That nest has been in operation since 1985. So this is 2010. What's that? 25 years. And in that time, they have they've produced young more often than not. I think of those 25 years, I think I have maybe 7 years when they didn't produce a baby or two. So they've been a successful nest. That's the Phenology Show for today. Thanks for tuning in. And as always, if you have observations to share, please send them along.